Max Hall and Melbourne Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
This is Nat Fyfe from the Fremantle Footy Club.
Trent Cotchin from the Richmond Footy Club.
Scott Benderbury from the Collingwood Football Club. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Patrick Cooch from the Carlton Footy Club.
It's Rory Sloane here from the Adelaide Crows.
This is Tom Mitchell. You're listening to the Coaches Panel.
Hey, it's MJ from the Coaches Panel. I hope you're well. And Super Coaches, welcome back to another episode as we try to help you with the decisions you need to make in what is a very interesting round of Super Coach. Out of the early season buys into the longest round of footy and an interesting week to digest already. Joining me on this episode is a regular part of the Coaches Panel. Done very well in Supercoach over the past number of years, and he's back on yet again. Mini Monk, good to see you. Oh boy, this is an interesting week. We are, for full disclosure, we're recording this Anzac Day morning, so the episode's out by the time Anzac Day Clash is on, which might make it hard for some advice, but we've already seen some matches. A lot of people in Supercoach, rightly so, put their VC on Max Gawn. And they're walking into Anzac Day going, well, I've already got my captain score locked in. It's a big week of Supercoach, isn't it?
Oh, it is. We're back to best 22. And for the next 5 weeks as well, it's, you know, we're not jumping in and out of the best 18 like we have been for the past 6 weeks. We're yet to see, as you say, who's been clothed and who's been swimming naked for the time being. I'm very interested to see how teams lie and how a lot of structures lay up, given that there's been a lot of neglect in some lines and a lot of overemphasis on other lines. So let's get to it.
So talk to me about this returning to best 22. We've spent, of the best part of the past 6 weeks, four of them have been manipulated with best 18. We've had the opportunity to loop on certain players' scorings, have poor scoring options drift away out of our scoring elements. We've learnt plenty through these early season buys so that if they were to eventuate in 2025, tactically we know there's some learnings we can take away. But you mentioned there's some things heading into this best 22 for another handful of weeks before we revert back to more best 18s. What do you think we can learn from both what our team health looks like in terms of team value, in terms of our rankings, in terms of the amount of boosts and trades we've used? We will talk about boosts a little later on. What does the return to best 22 actually mean for super coaches this week?
I think a lot of what got missed in best 18 compared to best 22 was where your players actually lie on your field. I'm seeing a lot of teams that are struggling to be comfortable with the rookies they might be fielding in their forward line. They might be running three or even four deep in their forward line this week in a best 22 week, which, you know, in a best 18 week, if you've got someone like a Conburn or a Darcy or a Cadman on field at F5, F6, you're just hoping that they pop a big score and they get counted in your 18. If they don't, you're just like, whatever, they drop out. But if this week, if you're running, you know, four of them, maybe a LaFau last night, or, you know, Calmus, maybe you're having to run a Wilson or a Garcia up forward this week as well at F3 or F4 even. That's where I think teams are going to maybe get caught out a little bit this week. And I think that that's one of the biggest learnings I take. You know, we always talk about it when we go through the mid-season buys to plan how your team's going to be exiting the buys in terms of where your players lie, so you don't end up with too many midfield premiums or too many forward premiums, so you don't get stuck. But I think in these early buys, it's more about where do your rookies lie? Where do you want to be fielding your best rookies, and how can you adjust your team structure in order to make that happen?
Yeah. Do you think our rankings are over flattering of where we are at the moment? I know sometimes it's hard to get a guide on where you're ranked at the moment, but sometimes we clearly look at them, and depending on how serious of a super coacher you are, we can put a little bit of our identity is probably a too strong of a terminology, but our confidence of how good we are at Supercoach in our ranking, early season rankings, are they a little inflated? Are they misleading? Are they somewhere in the middle? Where do you see rankings at the moment?
I think it's a bit of both. Like, yeah, if you've structured your team pretty well, you've gotten a lot of the right picks, you've made decent early trades, you've made good upgrades early, you're probably in a good spot. Like, you're probably somewhere in the top 5,000 at the moment. And it's just about how you exit the buys at this stage, which, you know, there's a lot of ways that you can do that. And I think there's a lot of teams that can still perform that successfully. But if you're out at 10, 15K, you're probably only about 50 to 100, maybe 150 points off the pace anyways. Like, you're not that far behind. It's a good captaincy call, making the right upgrade, maybe getting a bit lucky and not trading into a premium that gets injured early on in a round or early on in a game. Like, in reality, There's a lot of variance still to come in the season. Best 18 has helped mask a lot of that. If you're doing well, that's not a reflection to say that you've gotten lucky. But if you're doing poorly, that's not a reflection to say that your team's not in a good spot. I think it's just that everything's still super compressed and there's a long way to go in this season.
Yeah, some good advice. So we do get to this interesting junction of our super coach season now, where we've had some top line premiums just absolutely dominate the start of the year. Harry Sheezel has clearly been a separating pick in our defensive line, and Isaac Heaney in the forward line. Probably up until at least a week ago, you put a Caleb Sarong in that mix. Marcus Bontempelli has barely made a misstep, and the man we mentioned right at the top of the episode in Max Scorn. These guys, if you've had them, not only have you had great vice captaincy or captaincy options, but they've created separation from those that went, oh, maybe I'll get a Nozaiah Wanganeen-Miller, who's been fine, by the way, but he's not Harry Sheezel. Maybe I'll get a Luke Jackson, who's been fine, by the way, but he's not an Isaac Heaney. Maybe I'll get myself, I don't know, a Jordan Dawson. Bad example, but you see what I mean around.
Half step off.
And so what this means is we've had these top line guys start the season incredibly well. And for non-owners, they're watching their price not get unattainable, but going to cost you a lot to get them. And so we're at this upgrade season of, do I start to go, I don't have Bont, I don't have Sheezel, I don't have whoever, versus I now look over at, there's some value that's coming my way here from guys that historically have been at the upper echelons of scoring. I allude to a Bailey Dale last week who popped, I think, a career-high super coach score. And is incredibly cheap. A Jordan Dawson, the role's been fine all year. It's just finally last week he started to hit targets and impact into scoreboard impacts. And last night, we're not going to be able to get him this week, but last night, Christian Petrarca, let alone his teammate in Clayton Oliver, continues to just fall away ever so slightly. Again, none of them have been bad picks. Actually, that's not fair. If you start with Bailey Dale, let's say it was bad.
I think if you started with Dawson as well, it's probably been a bad.
It's probably bad too. But then now both these guys are in this great value space where if we don't look at getting them this week, next week, then very quickly we're up into potentially paying for them back at their original price versus these top line dominant guys, top of their line performers. That was a long preamble to ask you this question. What should we be prioritizing right now? The missed top end dominant line premium or the value option that might allow us to get an extra upgrade in by taking some skinnier price point upgrades over these next 2 to 3 weeks?
I think this comes down to how you play the game. I think it really comes down to how you want to play Supercoach, because the old, I use old school not as a disparaging term, but kind of as the way that the thinking was that you want to go for those top line guys. And you know, you jump on the likes of Heaney, Sheezel, Bontempelli, Marshall. Let's throw someone like a Zach Butters in there and maybe even a Sam Flanders in there at the moment as well. I probably think that he's close enough to that top line. You kind of want to own all of those players as fast as you can to be at a point where you're, you know, maybe you've got 20 out of the 22 premiums you want for your team, but you just hold a couple of rookies for a little bit longer and you live with that. Whereas
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The more, I guess, recent way to play and the way that a lot of people that have come, I guess, across from AFL Fantasy into Supercoach have been playing is that you've got to hunt those value picks. You know, you talk about Dale, he's down 80K on the year. Dawson's down 100K on the year. Petrarca, after last night, will be down over 50K on the year and will be sub $600,000. These players have been top liners. Like last year, Petrarca and Dawson were both top 8 midfielders. Dale wasn't quite a top six defender last year, but he wasn't that far off of him, especially in the second half of the year. He was very good. And if you say that you can get him at 420K or someone like a McRae at 480K, who has been a top line premium on it for multiple years, not last year though, but for multiple years prior to that, that's where it becomes the way to, I guess, get more bang for your buck. Because in the way that, you know, not only are you trying to build as much team value as you can, not only are you trying to get to a completed team as fast as you can, but you're trying to get as many points per dollar that you spend as you can. If you can get someone like Dale, who's priced at $420,000 this week, who goes 100 to 105 for the next 6 weeks up until his bye, that is a huge win.
Huge win.
You've gotten, you know, so much more value than going to someone like a Dacos who might be $570,000 a week in a good pickup, but it's 150K more for what, maybe 15 to 20 more points per week. It's not bad, but the points per dollar doesn't quite line up. And I think that the players like Heaney, like Shizu, like Bontempele, like Marshall, maybe to a lesser extent, someone like Flanders, maybe a Butters, these types of players, you just have to let them go. Like, if you're trying to catch up by bringing them in, you're not going to catch the teams at the top because they've already got them and they can just build an upgrade elsewhere and they can target the value instead. You've got to play in the next player who can kind of get to that top level. And I think that, you know, with someone like a Petrarca, he hasn't exactly been poor this year. It's just been a couple of games where he hasn't been exactly right. Last night was a very low stoppage game. Dale's down because he got subbed, or he was a sub rather. McRae's down because he was a sub. Dawson's down because his kicking efficiencies let him down, and the Adelaide midfield mix is a bit weird at the moment. But if you can see a pathway for these sorts of players to be able to turn around, then the value play is almost always the better player compared to the top line play.
Yeah. You mentioned a few interesting player names through there, and there's two you flat out mentioned, and one that I think you're alluding to that I think we should spend a few moments of time on every single one of them. The one that's the most traded in player this week is Sam Walsh, averaging 148. To say it's unsustainable at that level is a very easy statement, but that's not the essence behind it. Rather, it's a guy that's clearly performing to the capacity we expect. High value option, under 600,000. That said, you've got a Dawson, for example, who's at a comparable price range there, let alone some others. But he's the most traded in player in Supercoach at time of recording, and it would only probably take an injury and not playing this week for him to be there. Where do you place Sam Walsh, and does he have to go close enough to being a top eight mid from here to be worthwhile? Or is that an outdated way of thinking about the game and an outdated way of viewing Sam Walsh?
I don't think he has to be a top eight midfielder, but I think that he has to be at that level from now until his bye.
Okay.
He has to be, if you are buying Sam Walsh, either you're looking to keep him for the rest of the season, you're thinking that he can be at it or close enough to the point where you don't have to make another upgrade onto him, which, you know, is well within his wheelhouse. He is a very good player. He's come back fine from that injury. He's gone 160 and then 130 in his back-to-back weeks against not exactly easy matchups.
Yeah.
But he also has to match it against the likes of Jack Steele, Zach Butters, Caleb Sarong, Marcus Bontempele, Christian Petrarca, like a lot of players that have shown it not only just over 2 week sample sizes this year, but over 5 to 6 weeks and in previous years to the past. People are wanting to jump onto him this week because they see that very appetizing break even of 33. And yes, you get the immediate price rise. You will definitely get a price rise this week and probably next week as well. But you don't get those two scores. You don't get the 166. No. You don't get the 130. So what you got to do is you got to forecast what happens from now until probably the buy. Because if he's at round 14, you're saying he's going at 105. He's done the job. He's sitting at 600K, but I've got to flip him off now. Fine. Whatever. I don't think it's as simple as Walsh is the pick this week. I think that there's a lot of different paths that coaches can take. I think that, you know, someone like you alluded to just before, like a Jordan Dawson is, you know, cheaper than him with a break even that's turning because he's just had a 160 score and he's going to have those poor scores dropping off of his price cycle very quickly as well. I mean, he's at 530K with a break even of 73 and a 168 in the cycle. And next week, the 64 drops off of his price change.
and a North Melbourne matchup this week.
And a North Melbourne matchup this week. And then a showdown where he's known to be performing quite well in as well. Like, I can see people going there instead of Walsh. I don't think that that's something I would begrudge. I can see people going for those value options that we just talked about before, be it a Dale or a McRae or a Dacos, or even, you know, there's plenty of players that are presenting good value across lines this week. But I don't think Walsh is a bad play.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't talk anybody out of Sam Walsh if they said, MJ in Supercoach, I'm getting Sam Walsh. I'd say, that's fine. Have you just considered all the options that are around there and what it could mean for your team? As you mentioned, we have got a ton of just fascinating options this week. I think one of the benefits outside of being best 22, where finally we get to see how people's on fields genuinely look, how they, you know, we'll see some rookie score variants, which previously we've not really seen. The other things we start to see now is teams can look very, very similar at the start of the year, Monk, but then it's about trading. Do people move off a Tom Stewart this week, or are they like, no, I'm going to bank a Blake Howes? All of a sudden, you're not thinking of moving a Stewart off, but for those that don't have a Howes, that have got a Reed or a Caulfield, and it's like, well, I don't trust Will Graham. Okay, I've got to trade, you know, Stewart. So this is the point of the season where we do start to see some diversity, how they use boosts. Like, we should start to see some separation too.
And the premiums that people upgrade to just makes such a difference as well. Like last week, if you had, I don't know, a Tom Green compared to if you had a Jordan Dawson, well, suddenly that's a 80-point swing on that week. And, you know, whilst the Green owner has been happy for the previous 5 weeks, that week it's kind of been like, well, that was pretty crap. That didn't feel great.
Yeah, Marshall and Grundy kind
exactly.
of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like those sorts of swings and roundabouts do level out in the long run. But it's the upgrade cadence that you're going to. It's like the players that you're trading into. Like last year, a lot of people trade into Tuke Miller around this time of year, and then he gets injured just after halftime and pops that's a stinky score. You know, it hurts you in the long run, but that's the sort of thing that can happen. And I think that that's where we start to see a lot of the variance that comes around with this upgrade season.
Yeah. So coming into upgrade season then, we've lamented the forward lines a lot this year, that outside of Heaney, Powell, Flanders, and probably up until last week, Jackson, you could put in that mix, and Dane Zorko. These were the forwards. It's probably a bit stretched to call a Powell a premium, but let's include his scoring in that level at the moment anyway. So let's say that.
He's averaging 93. I think it's close.
That's
enough.
What I mean.
I think at the start of the season, we said anything basically above 90 would be at or close enough to a top six level.
Yeah, and he's been that, and barring some Clarko role manoeuvres, which have certainly been mooted for this week, whether that's Sheasel or otherwise, we'll see come Saturday. But Jack McRae finally reverted back to what we know he can be, and that is a top-line premium that can actually match it with the best premium mids in the game. After some suspected and just some interesting role usage, we finally got him back to his best big 120 plus score. He's now priced at a 480 flat, coming in an average of 76.5, but we know exactly why that is. It's rather the fact that the break even's now at 64, which is highly desirable. Another return score of another 120 definitely sees him push past that 500 spot. But I think the dilemma coaches have is Libat out of that team. And while he didn't gain in any center bounces, Ed Richards, who did pop into that center bounce, didn't really impact the game or the way McRae was used. So my question is, we know he's undeniable value. But there are two layers to this question. One, are our forward lines bad enough, and with McRae's price point, that the risk is eliminated? And then second, regardless of that, what do you forecast his scoring to be from here on in, and can we trust it to hold for the next 6 to 8 weeks until the Bulldog bye?
It doesn't eliminate all of the risk, but alleviates a lot of the risk. The fact that the forward lines are so weak, relatively speaking, compared to the back lines and the midfield and the ruck line, the fact that we are quite lucky that we actually have had relatively decent rookies there, like a Harley Reid, like an Ollie Dempsey, like a Sam Darcy, to be able to hide a lot of Karmas as well. These sorts of players have been able to hide a lot of the poorer scores so far that we've had in our forward lines. But if you're running three or four rookie deep in your forward line, you're looking for an upgrade this weekend there. Absolutely. Like, you're looking for whoever you can get onto that you think can be at or close enough to that top six level at a price where it's affordable to you. And when you look at someone like Jack McRae, who's just played probably his best game of the season, yes, Libba was out, but as you said, the CBA role wasn't where he was scoring. And, you know, Jaden Papowski's got a lot of work to say. Jack McRae's scoring isn't heavily related to his CBAs. In fact, he's probably one of the players that has the least correlation between CBAs and scoring, at least in AFL fantasy. And I would assume that's probably the case in Supercoach as well.
Yeah, it is.
He gets a lot of his scoring through working through the ground, through actually presenting for plus six opportunities or kick mark opportunities to be able to get the ball distributed on. He's got a good kick. He's got a very penetrating kick and he kicks very accurately. So he doesn't really get a lot of points off of him for clangers or ineffective kicks. So then we've got to talk about what's the impact with, you know, Ed Richards potentially moving back to halfback or to the wing role and Liberatore coming back in, because that's what we're most concerned about.
Mm.
I think that there's a genuine concern associated with that. I think you're genuinely to say that I don't expect McRae to go 160 this week. Like, I think if you're expecting McRae to go 160 this week, you've kind of missed the point.
Yeah.
I don't expect him to go 140 this week. And maybe he doesn't even go 120 this week. But if he can go at 100 for the next 7 weeks, up until he's round 15 bye, which is very important that he's the round 15 bye, that is a huge win.
Yeah,
that is a huge, huge win, because you've got a forward that's going at that top six level, who's under 500K, and at least gets you to the point where you can decide, right, do I trust Luke Beveridge enough to hold him for the rest of the season? Or have I seen enough that I need to jump off of him during the buys and move to some other premium in the forward line, which we might get through DPP?
Yeah.
The only other thing that I would suggest is there was another player that I would consider having a look at who's at almost an identical price, almost an identical break even in Jai Caldwell.
Mm.
If you can do either of them, I would suggest having a consideration between which of them you prefer more. Jai Caldwell, I think, is less than 1,000K. Less than 1K difference between McRae and Caldwell this week. Break-even is two apart. Caldwell's gone 99, 99, somewhere in the 80s, and 120-odd as well.
Yeah.
I think both of these players could be top six. I think that, one, you've got concerns with the role because players are coming back. Another, you've got concerns because there's players coming back, but also the coach.
Yeah. Yeah, it feels like, to you, does waiting an extra week make any lick of difference for you around McRae? Or is it like, you know, either way there's risk associated? And Caldwell, you could probably say the same in terms of the unknowns of midfielders coming back into that side and just the way that the teams play out. You throw Caldwell factor into the mix of he plays, well, time recording a handful of hours and you won't get to see the rest of the squads that are named. So you're locking in a potential move that will move some pain points for you. But does waiting a week on a McRae or a Caldwell make any difference to you in terms of when or why you should make a trade?
It's really hard, because I think if you wait a week, you're subjecting yourself to saying, I can either buy this player at 480K with less information, or I can buy this player at $510,000 with more information and I'm more happy about the role that they've got and the likelihood that is to hold. I think with Caldwell, there is a very fixed timeline. We're worried about Dylan Shield coming back in, Will Setterfield coming back in. We know that they are only a couple of weeks away at most. We know with McRae that Liberatore is coming back in this week.
This week.
As far as we know. And that the role might shift this week, but it's also Luke Beveridge. Like, he could just keep the same role for this week. He could lose the role in 2 weeks' time. It's just with someone that has McRae's pedigree and his ability to find the ball, it just feels like there's less concerns there for me than there is with Caldwell.
Yeah, that makes sense. And then probably the other mix to throw in. We talk about early buys, or not early buys, but early buys in the week, is a Nick Daicos. A clear victory for those that faded Nick. I wouldn't say it's a bad starting squad selection. I don't think the decision of whether or not you finish in the top 100, for example, is you did or didn't start Nick Daicos. I don't think it's at that level of separation.
But
a great move for you nonetheless. Priced now, highly attainable, looked really good last week against Port Adelaide, and now is coming up against a team that he's got some decent scoring history. To be fair, he's got that against pretty much every team based on how good he's been since he's debuted. Where do you put the Nick Daicos trade in for owners as a priority? 5-6 weeks ago, it was by Anzac Day. Was kind of the drop dead date. But now, as you've mentioned, we've got a Jordan Dawson's popped at $530,000 with a good fixture. It really does open up for the Crows from here on in, and at a good price point. McRae, as you've alluded to, he's under 500K. It's what, 100,000 difference between Daicos and McRae? That's really important. We don't need defenders in our back line right now, politely, with the DPPs of Bonner, of Martin, of Roberts, of McKercher, for those, and a bunch of others. So where does Daicos for non-owners sit in a priority? Is it still, if you're letting him fade post-Anzac Day, you're now, you know, potentially losing a little bit of the upside that you've picked up by fading him? Or can you afford to wait just another week?
If you'd told me that Daicos would go 3 over 130 scores in his first 6 weeks, including the opening round score, and would still be at a price under $600,000 by the time Anzac Day rocked around, I would have laughed at you and said, sign me up, I'll buy him at that price.
Absolutely.
Only reason why his price has spiked so far down is because of that one game against St Kilda, which was arguably an aberration game. It's his worst, I think it was his worst scoring game bar one maybe two in his career.
Yeah.
You're kind of just looking at that and you're going, aside from that, he's gone over a ton every game. Aside from that, he's had 3 games over 130, which is captaincy potential. And the run that he has coming up is very good as well. Like, I just don't think you need to overthink it with someone like Daicos. If you don't own him, try and find a way to get to him. And I think you
Where does it sit?
I think
so, over a McRae, over these guys. Yeah, I think that's fair.
This is where you can afford to have that weight and that extra look, because you're saying, I'm guaranteed, like, you're guaranteed that Daicos is going to be a top six defender. Let's not beat around the bush. He will be a top six defender across the formats, but even especially in Supercoach, because his game is just so favored towards it. He's a genuine vice captaincy option this week for those who haven't gone. He's a very, very safe floor guy. Typically, he doesn't really drop under 90 unless it's an absolute aberration type game. And he's durable. He doesn't miss games through random injuries. So I just think it's a no-brainer.
So you're saying you could, in theory, wait the week on McRae, not so much because you actually want the data point of McRae, but rather the valuing of Daicos over prioritizes, I need that cash cow off the ground in the forward line.
This is where you're kind of saying, it's like, this is where I come back to it. It is obviously team dependent. We do have a lot of defenders. Of course. If you've got, you know, three or four forwards that you're comfortable fielding as premiums and you're only rocking maybe two, maybe three rookies in your forward line, you're probably saying, I can probably go the defender this week. There's every chance that Daicos goes 160 this week. There's every chance that he goes just the 120 as well. But either way, you're getting a player that you know you're going to be hanging on to from now until the end of the season, barring injuries or random stuff happening. You can afford to, I guess, wait that extra week, maybe lose the 20-30K on McRae or Caldwell, but get that little bit of extra information that you might need to say, right, I am confident that they're a top six forward, or I'm confident that they're not a top six forward.
Yeah. And so the last thing I want to ask you around is about our boosts. I think a lot of coaches probably have no more than two left. There are some coaches that this week they're deciding, is this the last one I want to use it? And if it's not, it's probably definitely next week. And the beauty we know is we politely get the version of a boosts through round 12, 13, 14, and 15 where we open it up. So it's not like we have to save them all for the back end of the year, because really we're politely in Supercoach, with the volume of trades we've got and the opportunity of boosts, we're walking out of the buys with a side we go, barring injuries or some luxury trades, I'm pretty happy with what I got for the most part. So my question is, can we keep going aggressive this week? Because we don't have a ton of great downgrade options coming for us. You could probably throw Sweet as a probable one once we know the details of Soldo's absence and we see how he performs this week, Friday night against Rowan Marshall at his price point at about 150K. Like that's juicy for a lot of people. If only Sam Darcy was a ruck forward. If only Sam Darcy was a ruck forward for us, that would have been awesome. But where do you prioritize these boosts? Is it, I want to capitalize on the value of Dawson, of McRae, of not missing Dacos? Or is it, I'm forcing something that could stall my cash generation in 2 weeks' time by going too hard too soon? Where and how do you make that decision? I know it's team dependent, but what are the indicators that coaches could pull away to help them know whether their team's being aggressive or overly forceful with another boost?
I think it's all about how many players, or how many rookies you have rather, that are starting to stall in cash generation compared to how many players there are coming in as being rookies that are on the bubble. You know, we look at the likes of, not quite rookies, but Zach Williams, Massimo D'Ambrosio, Jeremy Sharp, Sam Darcy to an extent, Ollie Dempsey to an extent. They're all getting towards their top price. They're all getting to a point now where they don't have that much more that they're going to generate for you team value wise. The problem is we don't have that many great downgrade options this week outside the St. Kilda Garcia, not the Western Bulldogs Garcia. Outside of Hugo Garcia, really, there's not that many downgrade options this week that you feel.
Maybe Biggie, if you're thinking maybe Biggie.
Maybe. Again, a lot of people are a bit cautious to go there, but he's definitely an option as well. But again, it chocks your forward lineup because most people have, you know, Sam Darcy didn't get DPP. Cadman, Conman's got DPP, thankfully. But, you know, if you're putting a Biggie Nguyen down there, you got a Darcy Wilson, a Garcia, a Dempsey, you're picking between all of these different players to try and field them at F4, F5, F6. You probably don't want to go too hard on that point.
Yeah.
But it's that balance. It's about how much can I cash in these players? Is it the players to move towards? And is it the players to upgrade towards at a cheaper value? I can see a world where a lot of teams don't use a boost this week just because there's only the one downgrade option. I can see a lot of teams that do because they've banked a lot of cash this week.
Did the double downgrade the week before. Yeah,
exactly. And we had the rookies there. I can understand that it is very team dependent, but I think if you have one or two boosts left coming out of this round, it's not a bad position to be in. If you have three or four boosts coming out of this round, it's not a bad position to be in. Looks like, fingers crossed, we're getting the next batch of rookies coming through at the moment. Tajwo Woden was quite good last night, scored a pretty good score. We've got Hardiman coming through. As you mentioned before, we've got Sweet coming through. Darcy Jones is playing for GWS. Maybe he's not got the greatest job security, but he's someone who can score and is at that low price tag. If you can afford to wait a week, maybe 2 weeks, figure out how the landscape goes there, I think that that's also a play as well. But it's just that balance between getting off players at the right time and getting onto them at the right time as well.
Yeah, some good advice. Hey, mate, as always, you help us with our super coach sides, just navigating our own unique priorities, helping us unpack the processes we should be looking at, and then giving us some confidence to back our gut. As always, mate, an absolute pleasure, Mini Monk, to have you on the Coaches Panel podcast.
It's good to be on.
If you want to go and either check out this podcast in an audio or a video form, you can choose either. If you haven't subscribed to the Coaches Panel on YouTube, jump over there, hit subscribe and turn on the notifications. Every single week, there's multiple videos dropping for you to be able to go and check out. If you haven't done that, we'd greatly appreciate you doing that. Or if you'd rather just listen to these as an audio podcast, whether it be via Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from, we are there. Hit subscribe and give a 5-star rating. It's It's one of those small things you can do that makes a big difference in helping others discover and find out about the Coaches Panel. And of course, you can get in touch with us across social media. All the links of where you can find and follow us, you can find in the description of this episode, as well as the links to join our Patreon supporter group. There are different tiers that could be perfectly right for you, whether it be at that basement level as a cash cow right through to a premium. There are different levels of rewards you get every single week, and we greatly appreciate you becoming part of our Patreon supporter group. I know you would find it incredibly worthwhile. Well, the round is already well and truly upon us. At time of you consuming this episode, at least one match is down. I hope your vice captain, if it was gone, you don't need to worry about captaincy. If you haven't got it yet, let's hope, whether it be a Dacos, a Marshall, or anybody else from these early matchups, absolutely fires, so you don't have to have the captaincy dilemma on a Saturday or a Sunday. We hope Rookie Roulette is kind to you, and as we return to Best 22, well, let's just hope it works out for you this week. Good luck into round 7, and from all of us here at the Coaches Panel, we wish you well, and we can't wait to chat with you soon.